Now, if we make the subregion sufficiently small, okay, then on each subregion we can choose sections, choose spatial locations which have no spurious singularities. Okay, so take, suppose we have a subregion here which has no spurious singularity and subregion here which has no spurious singularity. Okay. Across the boundary, okay, we don't demand that it's continuous. Okay, you allow it to jump. Okay. But the price you pay is that you have to add corrections. Okay, you have to add corrections. So let's consider the simplest case where, say, suppose you have one PCO whose location is jumping from, say, U here and V here. Okay. So the question is, what will be the corrections? Okay. And one way to understand what the corrections are is to think of this, okay, as we said that you had this MGMN. This is our full P. Okay, this is a fiber direction. Okay. I drew things like continuous section. Okay, but instead, let's imagine that we have discontinuities, okay, which is like this. Okay. But now, just imagine that there is a vertical segment here. Okay, this is for the sake of argument. Suppose you just go up vertically. Okay. Because the form omega is defined on P, okay, we can in principle integrate along the vertical section. Okay, so let's ask what happens when we integrate omega along the vertical section. Okay. Now, along the vertical section, okay, you keep all the other coordinates fixed, but you change only the location of the PCO. Right? So suppose you have some yj. So yj is changing from u to v. Okay. So which means the tangent vector along yj, okay, is del del yj. Okay. So you contract your omega with del del yj and you integrate. Okay, you do the, you keep the other integrals fixed. Those will be done afterwards. Okay, you just contract to del del yj and integrate. And you saw that the effect of contraction of del del yj is that you replace chi yj by minus partial xi yj. Okay. So you effectively you remove this PCO, okay, and you insert an integral which is dyj, okay, from u to v, which is basically you can write this as xi of u minus xi of v. Okay, so this is what you insert. So the result of doing this vertical integral is that you just insert this factor of xi of u minus xi of v. Okay. Now, you can see that this depends only on the initial and the final positions. Okay, so even if there is a spurious singularity location, locus, okay, which is intersecting this curve or this surface, it makes no difference. Okay, as long as the initial and the final configurations are free from spurious singularity. And we choose our section so that there is no spurious singularity in either of these. Okay. So for one PCO, this is basically the end of the story. Okay, you just if you had one PCO, then you make these discontinuous jumps, and this is the prescription you use, okay, and you have solved everything. Okay. But now suppose you have two PCOs. Okay, suppose you have y1 and y2. And now when you are making this jump, okay, you have u1, u2 going to v1, v2. Okay, so you have to change u1, u2 to v1, v2. Okay. Now you have two natural choices. One is that you first change from u1 to v1, okay, keeping this fixed at u2, and then you change u2 to v2, right? So that's in the space of y in the y1 y2 space, okay, that's like going like this. Okay, this is our u1 v1, this is u2 v2. Okay, you go like this, but other natural choices are you first change this and then this. Okay, so there is an ambiguity, you choose one. Okay, you just make some arbitrary choice that you go this way. Okay, and you stick to that, okay, across this boundary. Okay. Similarly, here you have some W1, W2. Okay, across this boundary, you make some choice of how we go from U1, U2 to W1, W2. Okay. And then across this boundary, you make a choice of how you go from V1, V2 to W1, W2. Okay. But then you find that in general, there is no reason why on this intersection they would agree. Okay. This describes some segment. Okay. This describes some other segment, and this describes some other segment, and they may leave out some gap in the middle. Okay. So we have to fill this gap on this surface. Okay. So you add corrections not only on this codimension one subspace, but also on codimension two subspace, and you keep going. Okay. If there are k PCOs, you basically have to add these corrections up to codimension k subspaces. But once you do that, then you have the all the regular properties of the integrand. Okay. The you can pretend as if you have a omega, okay, which satisfies omega of qb phi is d omega of phi up to the sine. So this is the complication basically, that you cannot really choose continuous sections. Okay. Certainly not holomorphic sections, okay, but in general, it may not also be possible to make continuous choice of sections. Yeah, in general, you can do it for each spin structure, but near the boundary, of course, things have to agree. Near the boundary, things have to agree, right? Because you, well, okay, so that doesn't really depend. That point on spin structure, that whenever there is separating time degeneration, okay, there the choice is induced by whatever you have already chosen on the two sides.
Suppose there would be two numbers together. If you said it. When you're defining these brackets, you're working with an S building picture number minus one and harmonic picture minus one half.
Yes.
So, do you still need picture changing operators?
Yes, you need. With that, you need this 2g minus 2 plus m plus n by 2. Mm-hmm. Okay, because NS has picture number minus 1, that supplies minus m unit of picture number, right? Ramon supplies minus n by 2. Amount of picture number, right? So you have to compensate for those, and then you have to put in 2g minus 2 additional ones for
because you're not doing the fermionic integrals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because you are not doing the you have essentially already done the fermionic integrals, right? The picture changing operators come because you have already done the fermionic integrals.
But I thought it was not possible to do fermionic integrals first and then go on.
Well, on piecewise, I think you can do it.
Ashok is explaining exactly the complications that happen.
Ah, okay.
In doing the fermionic process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying that if you did things using the supermodular space, you wouldn't need doing it at all?
I would say that Ashok's lecture would have been exactly the same with supermodular surfaces. And this part of it wouldn't be there.
There'd be no picture changing.
That's
not
changing choices of patch.
Well, when Ashok talked about local coordinates, I didn't get quite enough time to explain all this in my lecture, but the story about local coordinates near punctures will have analogs for super Riemann surfaces. And there will be an analog of the condition of no small closed geodesic. And everything, I would say that everything Ashok said has an analog. In fact, Belopolsky tried to explain it in the 90s, although I think that part would have wasn't complete, but the picture he explained it when he wanted this one. It's not a complete coincidence. He was Zwieback's student. So he was going to work in the same framework that Sam is in.
You're assuming that fiber is topologically trivial when drawing that picture?
Well, fiber is topologically trivial if you ignore spurious singularities, right? But Once you assume that as previous singularities, of course, the fiber, it's not even a fiber bundle in general. Okay. But the way I'm thinking of that, you ignore spurious singularities. Okay. Then, of course, the fiber is just arbitrary choice of local coordinates and arbitrary choice of PCO locations. It's not topologically trivial because it's like the copies of the Riemann surface sitting there, right? Because the PCO location takes value on the Riemann surface.
Is fiber orbit of some significance?
No, not necessarily.
So isn't there nature that those three paths at the intersection will actually wind non-trivially on the Riemann surface?
But doesn't matter, because it, even if it does, this quantity, right, doesn't matter whether you go from U to V and along this cycle or that cycle. Because, I mean, this was in fact one of the surprising results of Wollind and Wollind, that they wrote down a correlation function of these xi's, right? Even though xi's are not supposed to be well-defined operators, okay? But it's a single-valued correlation function, so it doesn't matter how you go from U to V.
It's single-valued as long as all operators are in the small phase space.
That's right, yeah.
And the small phase space is the part that has an intervention in situations. So all this construction is done in this small phase space.
Yeah.
Any other topics?
So, there was something you mentioned that the bottom expectation value of the field is a gauge dependent quantity. I was wondering what happens if you try to do this, to focus on a setup that breaks supersymmetry from the very beginning. Then the vacuum expectation value of the field would be physical in the sense that it would source vacuum energy, right? I mean, string theory is coupled to gravity.
Yeah, but I mean, even then, the vacuum expectation value itself is not physical. Vacuum energy is physical, certainly.
So one could run the same program and check that the vacuum energy
would
be independent of the.
I don't think so, yes.
Or do we want to take the microphone?
No.
Find a topic of discussion for. I'm just supposed to discuss something for the next 5 minutes.
But yesterday afternoon's talks had no discussion, right? So.
I did, so it doesn't need to be related to the talks.
Yeah.
Ashok, you mentioned some. Argument that the obstacle for resolving Q psi equals some bracket vanishes because of the global symmetry, but I didn't understand the argument.
Because of the global symmetry,
The picture which you draw on there of the global, I didn't understand.
Yeah, okay. So this is, I would say, a reformulation of something that Edward did. So let me maybe look at some equations here. Okay, so you are trying to solve Q psi plus Right? So this is the looking for the vacuum solution. Okay, and we said that you can think of this as an iterative solution. Okay? You can try to build from some psi 0 equal to 0. Okay, and then solve it iteratively. Okay, and what we had seen. So we had this equation QB on phi k plus 1. This was a non-trivial equation. So this is an L0 plus equal to 0 state. Okay. So this was phi k. Okay, so imagine that you have solved up to order k, okay, and you are going trying to go one order beyond. So the only obstruction to this, okay, is the appearance of physical states on this side, because this you can already show is BRS state variant, okay, mm-hmm. as a consequence of a lower order equation. Okay. So the only way you can fail to solve this equation is if this is not BRS trivial. Mm-hmm. So this is captured by saying that if there is a physical state, say B, okay, C naught minus, if this is non-zero for some non-trivial elements of BRST cohomology, if this is non-zero, then you cannot solve this equation, because you can take the matrix element of B, left hand side vanishes, the right hand side doesn't. Okay, so you have to look for obstructions of this form. Now, if there is a supersymmetry, suppose there is a global supersymmetry, if there exists a global Suzy, then you can pair B with another fermionic state, okay, and you can write B as sum over A equal to 1 to this is for some fermionic state. Okay, this is the way the supersymmetry pairs bosons and fermions.
Could it be
that
the boson?
Yeah. See, lambda is a supersymmetry generator.
Ghost number one.
Ghost number one, yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay. F is a fermionic state, that's the partner of boson. This bosonic state. This is a bosonic state, right?
Ah, uh-huh.
Okay. So you're pairing B with F. So, okay, let's look at the lowest order, no psi, no background psi. Okay, then the pairing is B is F lambda.
F lambda, yes.
Okay, but we are assuming that in the presence of the background, there is unbroken space-time supersymmetry. Okay, so there the pairing between bosons and fermions generalized to this. Okay, that if, for example, you can show that if QB hat F is 0, then QB hat D is 0. Because linearized equation is QB hat F equal to 0, right? Not QB F equal to 0. Okay, so this is the way you pair bosons and fermions. Okay. Now you substitute this expression here in this. okay, not the state. So you will express the state B in terms of this F and substitute here. Okay. And then you try to check if this result vanishes or not.
You want to prove the power vanish.
Well, the point is, you show it order by order, right? You assume that supersymmetry is unbroken to certain order, equations of motion are satisfied to say the same order. Okay. Then you want to show that as a consequence of that assumption that supersymmetry is unbroken to that order, the equations of motion hold to one next order. Okay, so that's the goal. So you assume that both of these equations hold up to certain order. Okay, so there are corrections to this, and then the corrections to this. Okay, you substitute and we have to extend to next order.
So can you also prove that in the kind of the true vacuum supersymmetry is unbroken in the next order?
No, that requires more effort. No, that's not always true also. Because for example, you know this example of high local story. Right? If you start with a perturbative vacuum, right, then...
But if you give a vacuum expectation value to the scalar field, then you restore supersymmetry.
Yes, but
In that example, that takes a detail now.
Exactly. Because that coefficient could have been positive. You had phi star phi minus c times g square, right? That c could have been negative, right? The fact that c is positive is a detailed calculus in string theory. If c was negative, then there is no vacuum expectation value which you could give to compensate. And then supersymmetry is really be broken.
And that does happen.
I don't know of an example where it happens.
But in principle, yes.
It surely it almost surely happens in three dimensions in models with only two supercharges. Because from a field theory point of view, with only two supercharges, there could be an arbitrary renormalization of the superpotential.
Okay. Yeah.
In other words, the superpotential is not an F term.
I agree.
So there's no literature in this, but what I would guess that in a generic compactification, supersymmetric compactification to three dimensions with only two supercharges, supersymmetry is broken at the moment of order and can't be fixed.
Yeah. I agree, yeah. I mean, there is no reason why it shouldn't happen. It would be good to find an example, explicit example in string theory.
But in the spirit of Ashok's lecture, which I agree with completely, there shouldn't be any simple answer to your question. The answer should be that it works in string theory if it worked in the corresponding field theory. Detailed examination gives reasons it works in field theory. For example, with a hadronic spring, there's a massless neutral half particle that could have become a Dalton fermion except that it has the wrong chirality. And similar arguments in all the other, in general, you can easily, you'll usually find various arguments that will show that in the field theory that supersymmetry can't be broken perturbatively if it was unbroken at two levels. But a field theorist would have to make those arguments, and string theory doesn't have any magic that would keep you from that.
Yeah, so that will be very similar to what we are doing here. Here, for example, this is what you are getting as obstruction to solving equations of motion, right? But you also saw that unbroken supersymmetry requires this qb hat lambda equal to 0, right? This you could again try to solve by this iterative means, okay? Start with a zeroth order lambda, okay? And then you iterate, okay? And you will get a very similar kind of equation, okay, with an obstruction, possible obstruction, okay? Again, these are physical states, but now they are fermionic physical states, okay? And you have to check that the matrix element vanishes.
So that obstruction would involve the Goldstone
formula. Yeah, exactly. So that obstruction would involve the Goldstone formula, exactly.
So for the tender dimensional hadronic string, the statement would be that there's no candidate physical state with the right chirality.
Yeah.
It would be
an
obstruction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly.
Why is it that every V can be written as a lambda of
the net? Well, the point is you can, I don't know of a general proof at zero momentum, okay, at finite momentum, of course, you can go from B to F and come back from F to B,
yes.
Right? At zero momentum, I have just checked it explicitly, just list all the operators.
Well, let's just say it in field theory, it's always true, we're only interested in scalar fields.
Yeah.
And it's always true that the transformation of the scalar field is delta phi equals a fermion. But here we're discussing vertex operators. So this statement that I should make is just dual to the fact that delta phi is a fermion.
Look that away.
Yeah, except that in zero momentum, there are additional states. In this formalism, for example, there is a zero momentum dilaton.
But we're talking about the zero momentum delta. Delta of the dilaton is a fermion.
Yeah, but the point is there are two diletons, right? I mean, one is what is the gamma mu del x mu, and the other one is the one coming from C del square C. So
in a conformally invariant framework.
Yeah, you only have one, but in this framework you have two. And what we can check is that there are also two fermions,
right.
Okay, and they are paired. Yeah, but otherwise finite momentum, of course, you can check, because you start with boson and you go to fermion and then you can come back. Yeah.
So I still miss why this kind of why this
yeah
kind
yeah
of product
I have not finished
mean?
It yet. Yeah. So the point is, so what you do is that you substitute for B this object.
Yes.
Okay, and then you do some manipulation involving these square brackets. And what you get at the end, I'll write down the final formula, which will probably make it clearer. So this obstruction that you get it involves a sum over all physical states. This is sum over all zero momentum BRST invariant states. So this is what you get for this obstruction. Right? This was the obstruction to finding the equation, the solution to equations of motion.
Why zero momentum?
Why
zero momentum?
Because all of these are carrying zero momentum, right?
Why?
This lambda is, this is the global supersymmetry generator.
No, but the bracket of lambda with psi is not zero momentum.
But psi is also carrying zero momentum, right? This is a vacuum psi. So the vacuum expression value of psi, because you are looking at a vacuum solution, right? Vacuum doesn't break transition invariance. So this whole procedure that I described here, right, for finding the vacuum.
So sorry, for non-zero momentum, it's probably trivial that there is no obstruction in this
language. No, even for non-zero momentum, you could get obstruction. Meaning,
why you are limiting yourself for zero momentum?
See, because the first task for doing before you start doing perturbation theory is to find the vacuum, right? There you look for transition invariant solution. You could look for non-trivial soliton, for example. Okay,
right.
That will correspond to non-trivial psi. But here we are looking at first find the vacuum. In that vacuum, we will see if. What is the obstruction to extending the vacuum solution to next order? Okay, namely we have to prove the absence of tadpoles, right? What you normally call the absence of tadpoles in this language is the obstruction to finding vacuum solution.
There are ghost number three states for non-zero momentum too, of course.
Yeah, so you could certainly look for solutions to non-zero momentum. Those will
but
be like looking for solutions.
Does not work, or there is some trivial.
This argument? No, this argument will work, I think, though, except that this will now carry momentum appropriate to psi, right? And
okay.
this will not have a definite momentum.
Okay.
Right? If you have non-zero momentum.
Right.
Okay. But because psi carries zero momentum, lambda carries zero momentum, this is only a zero momentum physical state.
Right.
Okay. And now you basically see that this is the obstruction to finding global supersymmetry generator. Okay, so the obstruction to solving equations of motion gets related to the obstruction to finding global supersymmetry generator. So you start from here. This is what you have to show is zero if you want to extend the solution to next order. And by doing this manipulation, okay, writing B in this form, okay, and manipulating, you can reduce it to a form like this. This comes just because you have inserted a complete set of states in between. Okay, and you reduce the problem into this product of two terms. Okay. This you can think of, if this is non-zero, right? This will play the role of the Goldsino.
Because bracket is commutative. Is that what you mean?
Which bracket? No, no. I mean, the point is to go from here to here, you have to do some manipulation. We have to use this identity which relates one bracket to two brackets.
Ah,
yeah. So it's not a trivial thing to go from, because here you can see that there are two of these, right? So you have to use that identity in a non-trivial way to go from here to here. That's a somewhat long calculation which I have not described. This is the final result of that manipulation. Yeah, so this is the way you relate the obstruction to finding vacuum solution to obstruction to finding supersymmetry generator.
I see.
And when you put the factors of G string correctly, right, what you find is that if you have found supersymmetry generator to order G string, then that shows that you can extend the solution to order G string to the.
So, what you're saying is that bracket lambda psi equals zero in the cohomology, because otherwise there would be an obstacle to.
To extending, exactly, to extending this to next order. Yeah. So that's how you relate the absence of tadpoles to absence of supersymmetry breaking.
And like the argument, like it was in bosonic strings that the bracket was in terms of big goes, doesn't work. The bracket was B times the product.
What type of product?
In the bosonic string, the bracket was the product of the B goes on the simple product of
the B zero minus. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So that I've already included in the definition of the bracket.
But you cannot use this for to prove this absence of obstacle in this case.
No, no. In general, no, because we know the tadpoles can appear at higher genus, right? See that. This being non-zero, this obstacle being non-zero is related to the absence of tadpoles, massless tadpoles in a given loop order. Unless you have a reason to expect that massless tadpoles don't appear at all in the loop order, there is no way to prove this in general. Right? Having this obstruction is essentially the one-point function of B non-vanishing at Ghost number 3 and 2 are the same, right?
But when you hit with the B0 minus B0 bar, when you hit the ghost number 3 cohomology, you have non-zero. The kernel of B0 minus B0 bar on the ghost number 3 cohomology is 0.
Oh, no. See, all of these states are all in the B0 minus B0 bar kernel. See, these states are all in the kernel of B0 minus B0 bar, because these are our definition of H.
I think instead of saying that ghost number 2 and 3 are the same, we should say that they're dual. And ghost number 2 is where the physical perturbations live, and ghost number 3 are the sources. So you're trying to solve an equation that generalizes box A equals J, where box is the Laplacian, A is a field, and J is a source, which here is the obstruction.
Yeah.
So the obstruction, the right-hand side of the equation, is supposed to be in ghost number 3, which is where Asha has it.
But isn't it true that ghost number 2 state is B0 minus B0 bar acting on ghost number 3 states?
No, because ghost number 3 states, I mean, what I'm calling ghost number 3 state here is in the kernel of B0 minus B0 bar. See, that's why the C0 minus has to be inserted explicitly. See, all inner products here involve the C0 minus. So this is in the kernel of B0 minus B0 bar. This also is in the kernel of B0 minus B0 bar.
Ghost number 3 states are annihilated by B0 minus B0.
Yes, yeah. By definition, our Hilbert space includes only those states.
I don't believe you, because you can obtain to those.
Perhaps we can.
Here's ghost number three.
Stick
states
it to individual discussions.
AC plus AC bar. That's the first time in ghost number
two. Two states, yes.
So it's an island by B0 minus B0.
See, that's the definition. I mean, the Hilbert space in which I'm studying the cohomology, right, is always in the kernel of B0 minus B0 bar.
That's because otherwise you need to pick the phase of the parameter and you're with the topological instruction.
Exactly.
That was mentioned about 2 hours ago.
Perhaps we can start going to lunch and continue discussions. 7:40.